Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 181 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her farmer's market. Yeah, how many times have you shopped there and were clueless? We've got the answers today, and this is going to be a terrific show. And before we begin, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your official reminder to click onto iTunes after this episode and rate and review the show. I sit here just waiting to hear from you, so come on, don't disappoint me. I want to hear what you say. Your feedback is golden. I'll give you another reminder a little later on after we finish with the episode. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Now, how many of you have just sworn that you're just going to make it to that farmer's market, that you're going to scope it out, find out where the closest one is, and that as you show up, you'll just be totally clued into exactly what you need to do? Then you walk over there and you say, oh my gosh, I'm totally overwhelmed. I have no idea what I'm doing here. And then you run away. Or you just keep sort of randomly making choices, not quite sure what you're doing. Well, we have the answers for you today because we have our know-it-all about all things nutrition. And this is the wonderful Amy Myrtle Miller. Now, Amy, we've had on many times. She's an award-winning dietitian, farmer's daughter. She better know what she's talking about. Farmer's daughter, public speaker, author, and founder and president of Farmer's Daughter Consulting. And she consults on agriculture, food, and culinary, everything. Amy, welcome back to Her.
Pam, I am so happy to be back with you today talking about a topic that I love, farmers markets. Let's do this.
All right. So I just love hanging with you anyway. We could talk about anything. Let's talk about politics. Oh, let's not do that. Oh, that's a very bad topic. You know how that goes, Amy. All right. So, you know, seriously, let's start from the very beginning. You know, we've got people out there in our wonderful listening audience who have probably never even been to a farmer's market. How do you find them? How do you know which ones are the ones to go to? We're just going to start with choosing one and locating one, and then we're going to go through the whole experience. Go for it.
Pam, you started with an awesome question. The United States Department of Agriculture, USDA, has an online National Farmers Market Directory. So you Google that, National Farmers Market Directory, you can enter your zip code and you can find what farmers markets are within 5 miles of your house, 10 miles, 25 miles. I did this a few days ago. There are 5 markets within 5 miles of my house here in Sacramento, California, 10 markets within 10 miles. It's an awesome tool. And I discovered markets I didn't even know about on some days of the week when I didn't thought, you know, I had this option. So that is an awesome online resource.
Okay. Now say that again. What's the online you'd go to?
USDA, for United States Department of Agriculture, National Farmers Market Directory.
That's incredible. Do you know that I didn't even know that? What I always do is I hit Google and I just sort of, you know, scrounge around there, forage, and just put in, you know, local farmers market. And for my particular area, you're just a little show off. You've got 5 to 10 of them out where you are, you lucky person, you. All right, now how do you know which one to go to?
Well, okay, you got a lot of choices there. Do you want the one that's closest? Do you want the one that's on the best day of the week for you? You know, the one I typically go to is the first one I ever went to in Davis, California, Saturday morning. It's not closest to my house, but it's the first one I went to when I was a little 9-year-old kid visiting my cousins in Davis, California. I was a farm kid from North Dakota, and my memories of going to that market put a huge smile on my face every time I go there. It's also a covered facility year-round, so when it's raining here in the winter, you're not worrying about schlepping around in the rain the whole time you're at the market. and it's just kind of a good, happy scene. But, you know, you can also go to one that maybe features a grower who you love. You explore the area, you check out a few markets, you find a grower that has the best apples you've ever had in your life. You want to follow that grower around. Where is he or she going to be, you know, over the course of a week? So, you know, it takes a little while to find it. It's just like, how do you find your favorite grocery store? You do, and then you stick with it because it's convenient, like you like the people that work there, whatever. But yeah, use that directory, the USDA National Farmers Market Directory, explore some markets in your area, and then go back as often as you can to support those local growers and producers.
I just love it. Okay, now we've located the one that we want more than anything else. And you see, you know, I went to Berkeley, so I mean, you know, I kind of grew up with farmers markets because we had co-ops and the whole gig. And so we were totally, honey, we were locavore before locavore was cool, you know? And so I was a bit spoiled there. And I'm a real, you know, connoisseur of these places. Love them, love them. Now, here we are. You're going to take us, you know, by the hand, and we're going to walk into the farmer's market. What do we see? What should we expect to see?
You know what? I like to explore farmer's markets the same way I explore a buffet. Cruise the whole market before you start making any choices. If farmers and growers have samples, try the samples. Try before you buy. But cruise the whole market and think about your strategy. I know when I bring people to the Davis Farmers Market who aren't from this part of the world, they often get super excited, super carried away, and often buy more than they intend to. And that's fine. You know, buy what you can afford. But the worst thing you can do is overbuy and then waste that glorious food. If you're buying produce and you're super excited about it on Saturday, but the next Saturday you open the produce drawer and you're like, uh-oh. So be thoughtful about how much you're going to buy based on how much you're going to consume over the next few days. If it's super ripe, fresh fruits, for example, they were probably picked at the peak of ripeness, and they're going to be great that day, the next day, maybe a few days later, depending on what it is. Vegetables, you're going to have a little more time for them. But just be thoughtful that you're not going to waste food.
Well, I think that there's, you know, those rules are absolutely perfect. I've been sitting here scribbling away. The other thing, too, is, you know, obviously you have to be proactive. What kind of food are you going to be cooking for the next week? What's going on, you know, in your own little kitchen there? And what do you really need? Because I know what I do. I have to slap myself down, Amy, because I get big eyes. It's like a kid in a candy store. I want it all.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah, we all and happy do that. It'll be. I mean, don't you? I mean, you see these big, plump, wonderful fruits and vegetables, and you just want to grab them all, and you see these the real farmers, and oftentimes it's a family thing, and you're waving to them and you're getting into it, and you just want to, you almost feel like part of a family, and I love that feeling. Isn't that what you've experienced too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you go to a market often enough, you become known by that farmer or producer. They're going to ask about you, your kids, your dog, you know, whatever. And you start to form a relationship, and you start to see how that farmer's maybe energy level or personality changes with the pressures of the growing season. You know, there's maybe rain at an inopportune time, and the farmer's a little down that day, but he or she is going to be so happy to see you. I also love the relationships with a number of the farmers I support locally, because nobody knows a better way to use a product in a kitchen than the person who grew it. They're going to tell you their tips, how they or their family like to enjoy an item. They're going to give you ideas. A lot of the farmers in this area have great websites for their farms with recipes, which is a pretty awesome resource. I used to get a CSA box that came with recipes every week, and that was amazing. However, that's back when I was single, Pam, and believe me, a box was too much for me. Then I switched to every other week, and I was still wasting food. So I had to stop doing that. Now I go to the market when it makes sense for me.
Mm-hmm. Hasn't that whole issue of food waste really hit the headlines lately? You know, they say, well, all you people out there eating so healthily, you're actually contributing to the problem because there's so much food waste. What's that about, Amy?
Yeah, you know, it's a huge issue, Pam. And it's not just us as home consumers who get too excited at the farmer's market. There's food waste across the entire supply chain. About 16% of food that gets wasted in this country is wasted on farm. That's not intentional. That's not because a grower, farmer, producer wants to waste food. It's because he or she can't get the right conditions to harvest, can't get the labor to harvest. That's a big deal here in California when things need to be harvested by humans versus machines. Can you get them there at a time when that crop is ready for harvest? You know, so there's a lot of issues there. There's also the issue of imperfect produce. If it's not harvested because it doesn't meet specifications to look beautiful in a supermarket, is it going to waste or can it be used for a different purpose? I have a lot of colleagues in food service who love imperfect produce because they're going to chop it up and use it in awesome dishes. They don't care if it looks perfect on display somewhere.
I know. Hello, smoothie.
Yeah, I know. Smoothies, salads, baked into pasta dishes, you name it, right? So 16% yeah. wasted on farm, 2% wasted in food processing. Food processors are really good at full utilization, right? Because that's how they control costs and make the margins that their shareholders or owners demand. About 42% is wasted in restaurants and supermarkets. Supermarkets call that shrink. Restaurants call it waste, and you got to pay to get rid of it. And then the other 43% is wasted in our homes, and that's because we're major consumers here in the U.S. We're not good at managing the food we bring in. We're not good at the disciplined process of meal planning and determining what do we have on hand we need to use up and what should we buy to go with that to make an awesome meal. So, yeah, it's not just us as consumers. Everybody's got, you know, everybody's part of the problem, but everybody can be part of the solution.
Yeah, no question about that. Well, part of the solution is that famous O word. No, no, not that O word. I'm talking about organic. Hey, wait a minute. How did you know, Amy? How? Anyway. So what about organic? So here you are, you're saying to yourself, I'm going to roll right into this farmer's market. Surely everything is, and I quote, certified organic. Talk to us about what that relationship's all about.
Yeah. So in a lot of farmer's markets across the country, you're going to meet growers or producers who are providing organic produce or other items, organic dairy, eggs, you name it. But organic, you know, there are organic standards. You get certified by USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Organic's a labeling term. It indicates that a food's been produced through approved methods. It doesn't mean that that food is pesticide-free. You can use pesticides in organic agriculture. They just have to be natural compounds. It doesn't mean that it's more nutrient-rich. It just means that that grower producer has chosen to use organic methods in agriculture. So when you're supporting organic agriculture, you're supporting a certain production style, but oftentimes it's more expensive. And let's just focus, if you were shopping in a supermarket right now, you know that the organic produce is going to be more expensive. Why? Because it takes more manual labor often to produce organic items. You have more loss because of competition with weeds and pests that maybe aren't as effectively eliminated through those organic pesticides or other production methods. So there's more cost. If that's important to you to support organic agriculture and you can pay more for it, go for it. If you are making choices because you're short on money and you think, if I can't buy organic, I'm not going to buy any produce, that's a mistake because all produce is beneficial. But let's go back to the farmer's market model. There may be farmers at your local market that are using organic production methods, but they're not certified organic, and that's okay. The certification process costs a lot of money. So just because somebody is not certified organic and they say they're organic, they're doing the best they can. They just haven't gone through the certification process.
Interesting. So why would someone want to buy organic? Let's revisit that again. Just try to, you know, really summarize what people are actually getting out of buying organic versus just, you know, the traditional way of growing and harvesting.
Yeah.
You know, nutrient-wise and otherwise, pesticide, all the rest of it. What are they really getting? What are the pros and cons here?
So part of it is a value system. If you value supporting organic agriculture because you think it is better for the soil, for the environment. Okay, I can respect that. All of agriculture today is striving to protect and preserve soil health, to reduce use of inputs that may have a negative environmental impact. Everybody in agriculture is working towards this. There are challenges on each side, whether you're a conventional grower, an organic grower. Probably the only growers who have it easy right now, and when I say that, Pam, I'm using air quotes, are the guys doing indoor vertical agriculture, where they're growing without soil or sunlight. These are mostly Silicon Valley high-tech companies who are growing, you know, baby lettuces and other fast-growing vegetables in indoor environments. They don't have the competition of the insects, the viruses, the bacteria, the fungus, the mold that can attack, you know, crops grown in the outdoors or even in greenhouses. But so if that's part of your value system, that's awesome. Respecting why farmers make certain choices is also really awesome. I know a lot of farmers that grow biotech crops, they grow conventional crops, they grow organic crops, and they do this for different reasons. I have a great friend out in your neck of the woods in Maryland who, she grows using different production methods based on what she's growing and what the market is demanding. She's a vegetable grower for a frozen vegetable company, and they want some organic products from her and they want some non-organic products from her because they're trying to provide choice in the marketplace. So, you know, be respectful of why a farmer has chosen a certain method. Be respectful of, you know, if somebody's gone certified organic, wow, that's awesome. They've paid the price. They're getting their certification reviewed through USDA. If they're using organic methods but they haven't been certified, it's because they're probably they're working on really thin margins. They're trying to make a living. They're trying to be financially sustainable. Organic. If you feel good about it, that's a benefit. But again, it's not because there aren't pesticide residues. There are, but within the EPA standards, and that's really important, that's true no matter what production method, there are going to be pesticide residues on everything, but they are so small, so minimal, they are not a damage to our health. And that's really, really important for people to know, Pam. And I'm going to take a breath because I've been yammering on.
No. I mean, I can listen to your yammer for hours, and so would everyone else who's listening to you right now. They're like, wow, she's like, you just turn her on, and she's a fount of knowledge here. You know why? Because we're cutting through all the hype here. That's what I like about, you know, her podcast. I like to just get to the bottom line. That's kind of my reputation. And I invite people like you, experts in particular sectors, who do exactly the same thing. Let's just cut through it. You know, and, you know, speaking of cutting through it, if you're walking through a farmer's market, do most of the farmers there who are displaying, do they make it clear by signage or something else that they are organic, or do you have to ask them?
Oh, if they are, I mean, it's kind of a big marketing benefit because there are so many people out there that believe organic is better for a variety of reasons. So growers using organic practices, growers who are certified organic, they'll definitely have that on their signage. Absolutely. But, you know, if somebody doesn't have it, ask them, how do you grow this? What are your challenges with growing this? For example, there's a well-known organic walnut grower here in Northern California. And it's interesting. His top crop protection product is the same thing that the non-organic walnut growers use. It's elemental copper. Walnuts are the only food that are a good source of copper in our diet. And the reason is they spray it on trees when the nuts start to set so that a bacteria doesn't affect the development of that beautiful walnut. You know, so oftentimes there are more similarities among these production methods than differences. And it's really important to talk to the farmer, the producer that you're buying from, and, you know, get a little bit of the backstory. Why do they make certain decisions? What are their challenges? What are they super proud of? Oftentimes it's the struggle that is the greatest on a farm that makes that farmer most prideful, proud, wanting to talk about it.
You know, as I listen to you talk about farmers, obviously you're a farmer's daughter, I'm thinking that the mass majority of people today have never been on a farm. They've never walked through it. They've never really had a chance to see sort of the circle of life there, as it were, you know, from the moment you seed or whatever, and you grow, and then off it goes again. And of course, in the farm, you're going to see it literally farm to table. And so no wonder they know the recipes so well and the rest of it. But it breaks my heart to think that the grand majority of people have absolutely no farm experience whatsoever. I wonder, do a lot of these farmers invite people, or do they have some kind of an experience where people can actually come on to the farm and really, kind of sink their teeth and maybe their hands into what's going on? I think that would just be a wonderful thing. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, that issue of how well we understand agriculture in this country is a big and important one. Less than 2% of people in the U.S. are involved in agriculture. Only 1% of people, so half of those involved in agriculture, do it full time. The other half have to work off the farm to make themselves financially sustainable. I think, you know, one of the big benefits of shopping at farmers markets is you get to meet people growing your food. You get to talk with them. The issue of going on to farm, certain operations don't allow it because of biohazard issues. For example, if you have chickens or pigs on your farm, you don't want to introduce anything that could make those animals sick. So that's a big deal. On a farm, where they do allow people on, how do you manage that? And how do you make people who want to visit not get in the way of getting the work done? Some farms invite you to come on and work with them for a week. We need help weeding, you know, or we need help thinning, or we need help harvesting. Come work with us. Volunteer your time. And if you do that, hey, you get a discount on your CSA, your community supported agriculture box, over the next year. But, you know, getting that access on a farm, I agree with you. It's like a big opportunity. Every time I do it, you know what I think? Thank God there are other people out there willing to work this hard to produce food for the rest of us. Even though I grew up on a farm, Pam, I didn't do any work on the farm. I drove a tractor once in my life. I drove a pickup with a stick shift maybe 4 or 5 times when I had to help out my dad just move stuff around. I mostly worked in the garden with my mom, and I cooked a lot for my brothers, the hired men, my dad during harvest. And it's super hard work producing all this food for us, and it's dirty work, and it's, you know, backbreaking, and it wasn't my calling. I am proud to be part of the system that communicates about these issues and that is, you know, a positive supporter for farmers and everyone in agriculture. You know, again, I'm sidestepping your question. If you want access, ask. If they can do it, they'll say yes. And if they can't, be respectful, because they have good reasons for not letting people on their farm.
Well, there you have it. And what I think about in our area is we have all these beautiful orchards, and they invite people to come. They give you a basket if you don't have one. And then you could just, you know, for a certain, you know, amount of money, fairly nominal, you do everything from blueberries to oranges, apples, especially apple orchards. Those are so much fun. Sometimes that's as close as you're going to get. I'll tell you what breaks my heart, is I read so much about the fact that so many farmers are going under now, and they can't afford to stay solvent. And wow, there goes an entire form of life. Many of these are third and fourth generation farmers, and they have to call it a day because they literally can't, you know, keep up with all of the costs of keeping this going. And it makes me worried, you know. At the same time, it makes me extremely sad. And at the same time, I hear about younger people getting into it and starting up their own farms and just bucking the system. Where do you stand with all that, Amy?
So every 5 years, USDA does a census of agriculture. The last one for which we have data is the 2012 census. They haven't released any data from the 2017 census. But in 2012, the average age of farmers in the U.S. was 58.3 years.
Wow.
Farmers are aging, yeah, and I'm confident that the 2017 data is going to show an older age of farmers. You know, what I've seen in my family, I have three brothers. I have many nephews and nieces. None of them of the next generation, the nephews and nieces, have said, yeah, I want to farm. I want to contribute to this. And
wow.
That's a real tragedy because they've seen their parents struggle financially. They've seen the hard work. You know, so that's a big challenge. It's also a challenge if you have people who didn't grow up in a farming family and they want to get involved. How do you get the land? I mean, here in California, where an acre of land is $50,000 or more, how do you get that money? How do you get startup loans? There are amazing programs across the country funded by USDA that give people training, beginner farmer rancher program. How do you write the business model or business plan for a farm like this? How do you talk to a banker about a loan? How do you manage things so that you're scaling up appropriately where you can manage the work, you can manage the pressures, you can manage the risk and uncertainty? How do you actually till the land or care for the animals? So there are programs available to help people with the production side as well as the business side. But I'm with you, Pam. It is a huge concern. Now, I will tell you, one of the blessings of living in the U.S. is that we have a global food system. So if there continues to be fewer and fewer farmers in the U.S., there are other parts of the world from which we can get food. We also supply other parts of the world with a lot of food. But getting back to the farmers market, supporting local growers and producers in your area who are part of your community, do that as much as you can. Keep people involved in agriculture. Keep the conversations going. Because we need as many people as possible involved in agriculture, but the financial piece is really hard.
I'm watching more and more restaurants tout how many farms locally, wherever they are providing the produce for whatever you're eating. I know that True Food, you know, Dr. Annie Wiles' organization, Sweet Greens, the national group that does basically fast, healthy food, as it were, you know, have a big board where they actually name each of the farms that they use locally. And I kind of smile widely if I, you know, go to either place because then I know that I'm helping support. And I'm seeing more and more of this happen. You know, it used to be that it was just very expensive restaurants that had their own gardens and back and forth. Now it seems as though we're really reaching out and connecting with resources throughout our communities to be able to provide that kind of food. So that makes me smile. And I think that that's a very positive trend, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I mean, it's something on a menu that we as diners find appealing. It's something that chefs find very appealing because they can develop relationships with growers. They can work to say, you know, I want a tomato that's unique for my competitors, or I want the perfect squash to use in a fall soup, or, you know, the list goes on and on of what a chef may wish for. And growers, farmers, they want to make people happy as much as chefs do. They'll lean in and do what they can, given, you know, where they're growing stuff and what kind of climate conditions they have to deal with and, you know, the season. So, yeah, I love seeing those relationships. And like you said, it's not just happening in fine dining or small independent restaurants. Chains are doing it, and it's really awesome. So it's an important way to highlight, you know, the important relationships in our food system.
Well, yeah, you know, it's that whole chain, right, that we never really have a chance to understand. If you ask kids where a lot of food comes from, they'll go, yeah, it comes from Safeway. All right.
Exactly.
Kind of missed the whole point there, but there you go. So that takes me back to one of my most fond memories, and that is the Martin Luther King, you know, school in Berkeley, where, of course, you know, Alice Waters, the famous restaurateur, Chez Panisse, and, you know, set up a beautiful, magnificent garden and has the children learning how to basically plant the seeds and harvest and, you know, really help them gain a full appreciation of how the entire creative process starts when you look at something like a fruit or vegetables. And I had the pleasure of taking my dear, dear friend at that time, U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Regina Benjamin, to the garden and watching Alice Waters just about in tears. She was so happy. It was the first time in history a sitting Surgeon General had ever visited the garden. I bring this up because of the importance of these gardens. You know, you may not have maybe a great farmer's market. Actually, may not have a whole lot of farms close by one way or the other. But if you want to be able to have something that you could harvest and maybe even bring to a farmer's market, because some of these gardens are very big. They're in urban areas where you just have basically dead space and people have tilled it and whatever. Don't you think, Amy, that that's a great idea? And isn't that kind of a wonderful learning experience that's sort of intergenerational?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Alice Waters provided a huge benefit to anybody else wanting to do school gardens in this country because she got a lot of attention for it and a lot of funding through her foundation. I tell you, school gardens are hard because they need to be managed year-round. And let's say you have an awesome parent volunteer that wants that to happen in his or her child's school. Well, then that child ages out of that school, and who's the leader and advocate? So there are leaders in that area trying to find funding so that this becomes an integrated part of the curriculum, an integrated part of the school food service or school nutrition program, and it's not just, you know, an eager parent volunteer, so that, you know, it has to be a sustainable model. I think, you know, going back to the United States Department of Agriculture, they have a farm to school program, and that's another way to make kids, you know, appreciate farmers and other producers to help kids.
What is that program?
Comes from. So it's how you get local farmers to supply foods for the school nutrition program. And oftentimes those farmers will come in and talk to the kids, and they'll talk with the people working in school nutrition, and everybody feels a little more pride, a little more excitement. So those farm to school programs are all over the country. And, you know, you made the point earlier, you may not have a farmer's market where you live. My guess is every one of your listeners does. I bet every single listener has a farmer's market within 25 miles when they enter their zip code on that website, the National Farmer's Market Directory, because the USDA considers a farmer's market at least two farmers who are in the same location multiple times. So maybe it's shifting people's views of what is a farmer's market. It's not this beautiful, you know, area with 50 different farmers there on a glorious Saturday morning. It could be two farmers who said, we're going to do a roadside stand. We're going to do it every Thursday afternoon, and anybody who drives by can stop and buy from us. That's a farmer's market. So, and, you know, there's agriculture everywhere. Like you mentioned, urban gardens, urban farms, suburban farms, you know. So I will challenge every one of your listeners to get out there, seek a farmer's market in your neighborhood, go shop, go talk, go support the local economy, and eat well.
Huh. So as a final thing, what about, you know, you mentioned the Silicon Valley option. Now, these are hydroponics, right? And
no, not necessarily hydroponic.
Tell us what you mean by that, because I know a lot of people would like to spend some money and actually, you know, do this, as it were, soilless way to be able to grow, you know, the baby lettuce and all the rest of it. What does that actually entail?
So it's amazing technology that allows you to start seeds in indoor environments using UV light and misting water onto the seed and then the root system of that plant. The seeds are placed on like these mesh screens. The roots go down. The misters provide the water that's needed for the plant along with any nutrients that are needed to support that plant's growth and development. There's a huge one, probably the best known one, is Arrow Farms in New Jersey, right outside of Manhattan. They're supplying a ton of produce for metro area supermarkets and restaurants in Manhattan. They're building another facility in Shanghai. And again, it was started by two tech guys who said, how can we apply technology to farming? And I think we're going to be seeing more and more of this as kind of an answer to getting foods into large urban areas. But it's a really unique model. Is that the answer for all of agriculture? No, because it's really expensive. But Pam, if you know investors who want to support that, man, get them involved, because that's going to be a growing part of our food system, pun intended.
How cool is that? I mean, it's so Star Trek. You know, it is.
Yeah.
And it's yeah. You know what I'm saying, right? And
absolutely.
Well, you know, at some point, we're not going to be able to sustain growing all this food for the world because the populations are just exploding, you know, and what are we going to do? And then we have to look at our environmental footprint and all the rest of this stuff. And oh my gosh. So I don't know. Right now, for our wonderful Herb podcast listeners, I feel terrific walking into a farmer's market, whether it's two farmers, one farmer, 50 of them, or wherever it happens to be, because I actually love to visit all of them. We have lots of options where I happen to live. And so I enjoy it. It makes me feel wonderful. I'm outdoors. I'm, you know, with nature, and I'm feeling so good. And plus, you've just made it really clear to us what you're actually buying, how that experience should actually go, how to plan for it, how to find these markets, which is just the coolest resource. So I can't thank you enough, Amy, for enlightening us about all things farmers market.
Pam, my pleasure. I love these delicious discussions with you, and I can't wait for the next opportunity to have a good chat about issues that are near and dear to both of us.
Absolutely. All things culinary, agriculture, and all of those good things. Amy, you're just totally the best. All right. Now, everyone out there, you just heard Amy. She is the queen of agriculture. She's the farmer's daughter, after all. So, first of all, run on over to her website. It's farmersdaughterconsulting.com. Farmersdaughterconsulting.com. And if you're tweeting away, as we say, then her Twitter handle is Farm Flavor Fun. That really explains Amy. Farm Flavor Fun, right there. I mean, I couldn't have said it better if I tried to. And then while you're at it, take a moment right now and hit iTunes and rate and review the show, because I'm sitting here waiting for you. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch absolutely every episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Hey, thanks for listening today. And you better stay well.